Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Welcome to Valley Roundup. I'm Carolyn Sakariasen. In its attempt to get more social media followers, the Aspen Police Department had a bit of fun with the resort's reputation as a party town.
It said it got 80,000 page views, increased by almost a quarter the amount of followers the police have on Facebook, so there we go, like, you know, mission accomplished.
And time will tell if two developers who want to build lodging at the base of Aspen Mountain can play well together.
That's a funny thing, we got developer versus developer over there.
Meanwhile, construction activity in both Aspen and Glenwood Springs is on the rise. Embattlement Mesa and Parachute, oil and gas pressures are being applied in new ways.
There's a proposal to put a well pad about 700 feet from Grand Valley High School.
And in Basalt, plans to build a whitewater park have been approved, but logistics could get dicey.
I'm not sure they're planning for success. I mean, if it's really popular, if the in-channel work turns out to create two really fun play waves, there could be a lot of cars there on a weekend.
Finally, human run-ins with wildlife in urban areas are becoming more frequent. Be on the lookout for bears, moose, and mountain lions. Joining me this week are Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News, Brent Gardner-Smith, executive director of Aspen Journalism, Roger Merle, columnist for the Aspen Times and the Snowmass Sun, and Randy Essex, editor of the Glenwood Post-Independent. Thanks for coming in and Randy being on the phone down there in Glenwood.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Glad to participate.
Good to be here.
I'm going to start by asking you, Curtis, about your story you had in Thursday's paper about the Aspen Police Department's use of Facebook and their effort to get more savvy with social media and get more followers. So they're luring people with cocaine?
Yes. Making jokes about cocaine is their new social media strategy at the Aspen Police Department. And it seems to be working.
I mean, tell us what the deal is. What was your story?
So basically, someone's shopping at the grocery store. They don't want to say which grocery store, but it's the one in Aspen that has self-checkouts. someone's going to check out, and there is a clear little plastic baggie containing a white powdery substance sitting on the scanner of the self-checkout. And this person took a picture of it and shared it with a friend, maybe, or shared it on their own social media. And through various channels, it wound up in the hands of the Aspen Police Department, which really just took it and ran with it. Well, the first thing the police department did is they went to City Market to open some sort of investigation. But, of course, the free cocaine sitting on the checkout had long since disappeared. But they took the photo and they shared it on social media. And with a really kind of funny little preamble talking about, you know, making jokes about donuts and about how, oh, don't you just hate it when you go to the grocery store and you come home and there's an item that you forgot one of your items. So you frantically search your pockets and lo and behold, it's not there. And we know these white powdery substances aren't cheap. So, you know, we feel bad for this guy and we really do our best to return a lost and found property to its rightful owner. But, you know, in this case, we're just going to leave it up to this person. I mean, it was funny.
Right.
It was hilarious.
Right.
I mean, this got a lot of
lines at the grocery store checkout.
Okay. We thought long and hard on that one. The lines at the grocery store attracted police attention this week, but not those kind of lines.
Yeah.
And so they put this on the social media, and yeah, I think everyone in Aspen thought that was hilarious. It said it got 80,000 page views. It's increased by almost a quarter the amount of followers the police have on Facebook. So there we go. Like, you know, mission accomplished.
Right.
According to their strategy here. And
why do the police want followers on Facebook?
So, you know, when the river's flooding or the forest fire is bearing down on you, they can, you know, whenever there's an emergency where public communication
public
is
outreach.
Key. Well, but while everyone was having a good laugh here, I did, you know, I did want to know, like, I mean, is this appropriate to be a law enforcement agency that's apparently making light of drug use?
That is a good question.
Well, does it really help the image of Aspen? I mean, they said it was, you may as well tell the truth and not.
Right,
not
and that
hide
was his answer, which I actually really appreciated his answer. And as someone who believes that, you know, humor is a force for good and something that is very soothing, you do need to laugh at yourself, and that's what the assistant chief said, is that, well, look, it is a reputation that Aspen has. Let's not kid ourselves. So we can either acknowledge that and laugh at it and try and have some constructive humor, you know, and in his opinion, that would be the more appropriate way to address it.
Mm-hmm. But did it accomplish anything? I mean, really, we've got huge substance abuse rates here in the Valley. We've got high suicide rates. We've got depression issues. And not to, you know, throw the wet blanket on this thing, but does that humorous angle help that?
And if you looked at the comments that were on this Facebook post, half of them were like, oh, that's Aspen for you.
Right.
I'm not proud of the fact that this place is party central.
Nice. Facebook is also being used to thwart a development proposal at the base of Aspen Mountain. So there's...
It's a multi-purpose platform.
Right.
Facebook.
Yeah, that's a funny thing. We got developer versus developer over there.
So the setup here is you've got one developer, Michael Brown, and his group that own the Lift One Lodge rights.
Just downhill, which is just below the site where the Gorsuch House would be built. This is all at the base of Lift 1A, western portal of Aspen Mountain. And, you know, there's big changes coming to this neighborhood that the town, understandably is very, you know, torn over in a lot of ways. I mean, I think everyone wants to see some improvement there. We want
not
to
me.
We're talking about a 70,000 square foot hotel project that includes a new lift, which is the Gorsuch site, and then the Lift One Lodge site just below it is another 70,000 or 80,000 square feet of development. So it's a lot of development. It will be a major change to the face of that side of the mountain. And the Browns, the Lift One Lodge guys, there's some aspects that they don't particularly like about the Gorsuch plan. I mean, for one, it's a giant building that is cutting off their beachfront access.
Right. Yeah. So they've hired a PR firm.
So they've
in
hired
Denver.
A PR firm to wage this campaign against the Gorsuch House.
And what are they saying in this campaign? What is this Facebook reference? I saw that Chris Davenport had written a op-ed in your paper.
Right.
Saying don't believe any of this.
Well, what they're saying, their primary argument is that the way this building is going to be sited is it essentially cuts off the lift. If you're a member of the public walking up South Aspen Street, all you're going to see is this four-story building. You're not going to see a chairlift. There's not going to be, like, you know, the gondola plaza. You walk up the street, you round the corner, there's this big open plaza, and there's a gondola. This is a little bit different of a site plan where the concern is that the lift is the public access is not as good as it should be. It's not welcoming and inviting to the public to come ski the mountain.
The Brown campaign also says that they're going to move the lift 100 feet up the hill. Now, I don't know about that. I mean, Gorsuch told me that they're not moving the lift uphill,
so
that they're actually moving it down.
This is
so
a
I don't
tricky
know the
one
truth.
For me because he know. Told me the same thing. He said they're putting the lift on the very bottom of their property
that's
line.
What he told me.
But that has apparently changed because it is now, it is very clearly, if you look at the materials, it is uphill of where the current lift is.
So that's a bad thing, I think.
And so what the Browns are doing, I mean, are they providing accurate information out there as far as this whatever they're trying to do?
Well, they're certainly making their argument, and the privatization line has some detractors saying, no, that's false. It's not private. It's still a ski area that anyone from the public can purchase a ticket to and use the lift. You know, they're not without some sort of confirmation from the city's community development staff, who have taken a pretty critical look at this application. And they have also said this in a lot of ways functions as privatizing the ski lift just because of that public access.
I think it's interesting that Chris Davenport said, and they've hired a Denver PR firm, where Gorsuch has hired an Aspen PR firm. I mean, really?
Right, you got Maureen Potion.
Well, it is certainly unusual, right, to have a developer hire a PR firm to fight another developer's project.
I've never seen that.
Every developer hires a PR team.
My guess is you're going to enjoy that lift for quite a while.
I think so. I hope so. It looks like it.
If that's going to be going on between the two developers, I think that's going to take a long time.
Well, and one of the things that's came out in the reporting on all this is that they basically stopped communicating. You know, we've for a year have been talking on this show about how great it would be if everyone could get on the same page and we could come up with a plan to extend the lift further down into town. And the crux of that has always been, can the Gorsuch folks and the Lift One Lodge folks work this out?
Right, play well in the sandbox together.
Can they play well in the sandbox together? And
Apparently not.
They have, you know, communication was cut off after a certain point because negotiations just weren't going well and they haven't been talking to each other. And now they're, you know, firing shots at one another on Facebook. Right. So it doesn't really seem like that has gone very well.
It'd be funny if they shoot each other down.
The thing that kind of troubles me about the Gorsuch thing is people are saying, we should approve this because Jeff Gorsuch is a good guy. And whenever it's about the developer, it always makes me think, well, it's really about the building and the building rights. Should we approve this because the guy's a nice guy?
Yeah.
I mean, it troubles me.
I'm guilty of that because Jeff's a good friend of mine. And the view I took was there's going to be something up there, and Jeff, I think, would do as good a job or better than anyone else. That may not be true. But, you know, this whole lift thing where they told me they were bringing the lift all the way down, and now apparently that's not true, that kind of stings a little bit. So, I don't know.
Curtis, you had another story about development, the amount of development that has taken place already in the city, which is what was the number, the valuation?
$187 million worth of building permits have gone out the door from the City of Aspen Building Department.
So what, that's one penthouse?
Well, you know, it's really interesting about those numbers, too. Those are self-reported numbers, right? The developers come in and say, oh, I'm going to build a $5 million project,
correct,
and then I'm going to pay fees based on my estimated amount, which has to be lowballed, right?
Well, the city does a true-up process with them at the end of the process. I think there is some mechanism in place where they go back and look over everything that's being done and make sure, you know, it comports with what they reported on their building permit application forms.
But that is cost. Building cost.
Right.
That's not interior or anything.
No
of that
land.
Stuff.
That's not fair market value.
Right.
That's,
that is just the value
just
of
the lumber
construction.
And
the labor and all that.
So that's a huge number.
It's a huge number. It's also double.
Compared to last year.
Well, so here's the thing. This report was as of the end of May. May 31st is when the $187 million number was on there. In May 1st of 2015, we were at about $91 million. So, I mean, that seems like a huge jump, right? Oh, my God, construction valuation has doubled. No, you know, no wonder traffic's such a nightmare. There's twice as many, twice as much construction going on. That is not quite the case, at least according to the building department. They're saying, you know, the way the permits have come in this year, we just had a number of very big projects get their permits in early, so it skewed those numbers up. We think by the end of the year we'll be up, but certainly not double.
Do you think the community is ready for a discussion about let's cap building permit valuation at, say, $150 million a year?
Probably not, because it's at $300 million a year right now, is what it was last year.
I didn't think it would go very far, but it's an interesting concept.
But it is an interesting concept, and I can tell you, someone who lives 50 feet from Highway 82, where my sliding deck door is 50 feet from the highway, it's just so much construction traffic every morning.
Yeah.
Very loud.
It's Randy, do you have that?
It's like living in Glenwood Springs.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. What's the value? What's the construction valuation on that bridge down there, Randy?
Yeah. Randy, do you,
well,
do you feel that?
Well, the construction itself is, I think in the 70 millions. The whole project is $126 million, and it's the largest infrastructure project on the Western Slope in 25 years. And, you know, it's for you guys. It's to move the toilet paper and lemons and workers up to Aspen.
Yeah.
We appreciate it.
Do you feel the construction outside of the bridge? Is there a lot of construction activity happening in Glenwood, Carbondale, Mid-Valley?
There's going to be a lot of work in Glenwood probably for the, I guess, 2 or 3 years after the bridge is built, because it opens up some really good opportunities on the north side of the river. There's going to be, I'm calling it like a second Glenwood downtown. Of course, it'll be really nicely connected with the new pedestrian bridge, but the path that Highway 82 takes now, either you know, if you're coming from Aspen to the interstate, you have to do that right, that sharp left turn along 6th Street on the north side of the river. That's going to be gone. So that whole area, which is by the hotels and the hot springs and the Hotel Colorado, is going to become much more pedestrian and bike friendly.
Yeah, and a lot of development, right?
And
commercial,
yeah,
and restaurants.
It's going to be streetscaped by the Downtown Development Authority. And already a couple of brew pubs is located over there. I think it's going to be really nice. And then the project that I think in tandem with that that will really change the character of Glenwood Springs is demolishing the old sewer plant that's at the confluence of the Roaring Fork in Colorado. There's going to be a big debate here about what that's going to be, but there will be housing there. There will be restaurants and shops. There's a movement to create sort of a performance space, an outdoor theater. In any case, that is only about 4 blocks from downtown, maybe 5 blocks from downtown. And if you go there now, I mean, it's a sewer plant. You know, it's a derelict sewer plant now, but you can't hear the traffic. You can hear the rivers.
Right.
And that is just going to be really prime development. And if you go up Valley a little bit, the school district's going to renovate Glenwood Springs Elementary School, which is right by the confluence. There was a land swap with the city to kind of increase the development opportunities of the confluence area. And then there's a new school, kindergarten through eighth grade, that's being built. Carbondale, there's going to be a new city market, which will be the biggest construction project in Carbondale for a while. And then, of course, the school district has to figure out how it's going to spend its $5 million on housing in both Glenwood Springs and Carbondale. Frankly, I think Glenwood's going to come out of it. Right now, it's a little bit of hell, you know, no question about it. But I think 3 or 4 years from now, if you come to Glenwood Springs, the character of the town is going to be really changed.
You are listening to Valley Roundup, a look at the week's news with editors and writers. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. Joining me this week to talk about all things development and progress are Randy Essex, editor of the Glenwood Post-Independent, Roger Merolt, columnist for the Aspen Times and the Snowmass Sun, Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News, and Brent Gardner-Smith, executive director of Aspen Journalism. For those of us who were here when Highway 82 was a double lane,
The good old days,
right?
Yeah.
And we thought when they built that second, you know, the top part, that was hell waiting for that to get done. But it was a great improvement.
Yeah.
Can you imagine being just one lane each way?
Going through Snowmass Canyon. Yeah, that must have been pretty terrifying.
It was Killer 82.
I drive through Glenwood. I wonder how nice that town would be if they really had a true bypass there and Main Street just was for local traffic. That would be a beautiful, beautiful downtown.
We can't move the traffic. It's too expensive to move the traffic. So what's going to happen is we're going to move commerce. Commerce will shift really to the south side of the river. It'll just be the restaurant and dining strip kind of under where the bridge lands. And then it'll be the north side of the river, this new area that I'm talking about, and the confluence. And that will create some of that difference and give Glenwood a little bit more quiet charm than it has now.
What's not so quiet charm is going to be the oil and gas drilling near the high school, the Grand Valley High School.
Yeah, and
that just doesn't seem right at all.
I'll probably hear about this, but I want to say something politically incorrect. There's a proposal to put a well pad about 700 feet from Grand Valley High School in Parachute. So internally, you know how journalists are. We've been joking that because Parachute is pretty reliant on oil and gas and had to legalize pot because oil and gas activity is down, I'm sure that they'll overcome the objections and maybe the Grand Valley Cardinals can become the Grand Valley Frackers and the cheerleaders can say, drill, baby, drill.
Uh-huh.
Drill them. Yeah, and in all seriousness, Garfield County has exercised its right under a new state regulation that came out of the governor's task force to be involved in the early, like, pre-permit discussions.
I find that really interesting. You're the first county that's going to attempt this.
Yeah.
This local government being involved in the oversight.
Garfield County is going to possibly suggest there's something wrong with the drilling rig?
They're going to be involved.
You know, collaboration doesn't necessarily imply criticism, okay. But they are getting involved early on.
There's already.
So we'll see, and it will help the state see how that process might work. If there's a town, for example, that is perhaps more opposed, we've written a lot, and I, in a column, was kind of critical of the plan to drill within the Battlement Mesa residential area. If you look at what Garfield County did, I mean, they're allowing the drilling. As far as Garfield County is concerned, that's fine, but they did put a large number of restrictions that are meant to mitigate the noise and odor and so forth as much as possible. That's not going to eliminate it. If you're opposed to fracking, if you're opposed to oil and gas drilling, you're not going to be happy with that. But trying to create a balance, I mean, I'm trying to look at it from the Garfield County Commissioner's perspective. They did work hard to put as many restrictions on that as possible.
There's already a well within a half a mile of the school.
And then simultaneously, SG Interest has, they're still moving forward with actually wanting to put well pads within the residential areas of Battlement, right?
And that's URSA, not SG.
Okay. But, all right. Yeah.
Yes, and there's going to be a state hearing coming up on that, and the State Oil and Gas Conservation Commission actually granted the Battlement Mesa neighbors the opportunity to speak at the hearing, which in some ways that's what they've wanted. They felt like they haven't been heard. So
what is that hearing?
That could be more interesting than we expected it to be. The URSA hearing before the State Oil and Gas Commission is July 18th through the 20th here in Glenwood Springs. So it'll be a little bit closer for the people to come pay attention.
Yeah. Brent, let's talk about the more development, but it's on the river.
Well, Pickens County has awarded a $800,000 contract to work in the river in basalt and do quite a bit of work in the channel and create two kayak waves or play waves in a whitewater park. And they are going for a minimal approach with streamside amenities and access. And it's kind of wedging it into this neighborhood that's, it's not a very friendly spot to reach the river. It's down a little cliff. And so it's not like a classic whitewater park. It's really being driven by the water rights as opposed to the location for a recreational site.
Explain that a little bit.
Colorado, you can get a water right for a recreational in-channel diversion, which means you can demand a certain amount of flow come down to your features, your wave-producing features. Pickens County wanted it just above the frying pan and just on the edge of the Pickens County line so they can call for as much water as possible to come down the Roaring Fork to their whitewater park. So it may prevent future Trans Mountain diversions from happening. So it's got a lot of validity if you want to keep water in the river. But the recreational benefits are kind of secondary to that. And so it's not really clear. They originally wanted, Pickens County's application thought that you should access the river from the river left side or the stubby side of the river. But that has problems. It's kind of a congested zone over there getting past the subway and the liquor store and the car wash. And so they're going to put it on Two Rivers Road, which is actually a pretty busy road. And there's just this narrow little space between the road and the river. So they're going to have to build this long pedestrian corral to keep the kayakers from wandering into traffic with boats over their shoulder.
What about their cars?
Well, there's really no place to park. I mean, they're going to put four more spaces at the little Fisherman's Park spot, which is across the street from the river and above the kayak park. And they're going to put like five spaces just above the streamside office complex there. And they're not going to widen the road or move the road. They're just going to kind of shoehorn it in. So it's funny. I'm not sure they're planning for success. I mean, if it's really popular, if the in-channel work, which is pretty extensive, turns out to create two really fun play waves, there could be a lot of cars there on a weekend and really no place to put them. So we'll see how that goes.
Here's one thing I've always wondered about this. And you may have just answered my question. We're talking about the county line and how this needs to be in Pickens County. But You were talking about, with the Pan and Fork, developing a river park, downtown Basalt. And I've always thought, well, wouldn't the play wave be great as an amenity for this 3 or 4 acre river park?
Well, it's a great question. It's come up a lot in Basalt. You know, and you don't need a water right to build a play wave. The really popular wave on the Colorado in West Glenwood Springs does not have a water right attached to
it.
It's
just there.
It's just there. And so if Basalt wanted to go in and not pursue a water right and just build a park at their new Riverside Park, they could. So,
but that's in Eagle County, right?
That's in Eagle County. Okay. And the interesting thing, too, about these recreational in-channel diversions, you know, you're doing it ostensibly to keep water in the river for the health of the river, but because you have to build something in the river for the water to flow over to make the water right absolute.
You have to temporarily shut off the river.
You have to move the river and bring in the backhoes and artificially build these things in the river channel, which look pretty innocuous once the river is put back and the water's flowing over them. But there'll be a couple months there with some pretty big machines in the river, and it's always distressing to me, at least.
I always wondered about the water rights. I thought they were all spoken for, you know, up at this end of the watershed, but I guess that's not true. You can still apply for water rights and get them?
Anybody can take water out of any river in Colorado if you can put it to a beneficial use, if you can actually use it. You just have to get in the back of the line. And so you can still get a new water right. You just have to say, well, if there's plenty of water for everybody, then I'll get my water.
If Las Vegas is happy, I'll get my water.
Well, if there's they call it
Front Range.
There's a great term of art. It's called free river. That if there's plenty of water for everybody, it's a free river. Everybody take what you need. And so it's but it is also the whole system is what they call over appropriated. In theory, all the water is spoken for. And so a lot of times if you do develop a new water right, you have to also develop a backup supply of water, and usually contract for water out of Rudai, so that in times of shortness, you can keep diverting if you want.
So if Pueblo has a need for water, they're going to keep diverting it no matter how much they demand for water down at the water new water feature you're talking about.
Well, again, it's all about where they are in line. In other words, so the 2011...
Well, they'd be last, right? They'd be last in line, presumably?
Pickens County?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a junior water right. It's only 2012, I think. And so, but in 50 years, they'll be in the middle of the line. So it'll have value in the future.
Gotcha.
Very briefly, there was a couple of wildlife stories that have been happening. I think it's just interesting that there's all these human wildlife conflicts that are happening. Like, on one day, we had Lincoln Creek was closed to soft-sided tents.
Yeah, which that's a major
bears.
Impact. Yeah, like that is a huge camping area. It's a wonderful recreational spot. Now, if you can't tent camp up there,
it's hard to get your fifth wheel back
there. Yeah, that's a really rough road.
Also, the same day that the woman got charged by a moose in Morrell open space.
Yeah. Moose are the new bears
at the community garden, right?
Right, and then there's the mountain lion attack. Yeah.
Mountain lions are taking over the Rio Grande Trail.
Right, and so then that was the headline in Thursday's paper. They had reopened the stretch between Rock Bottom Ranch and Catherine's Store on Rio Grande Trail because they saw the three kittens. They didn't know, they couldn't find the mother. And so they closed the trail. And they reopened it for like a couple hours, I think. And then they saw the kittens again, so they closed it. So indefinitely, that stretch of the Rio Grande is closed to the public. So, and then Randy, you had a story about how bear came and ate a fawn in somebody's backyard. So,
yeah, right off of Grand Avenue.
It's just a little too close for comfort. Okay, well, thanks for coming in, and Randy, taking the time. Appreciate it.
Glad to join.
Always fun.
Thanks, Carolyn.
Thanks.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of Valley Roundup. Thanks to Roger Merolt, columnist for the Aspen Times and the Sonoma Sun, Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News, Randy Essex, editor of the Glenwood Post Independent, and Brent Gardner-Smith, executive director of Aspen Journalism. You can get a rundown of links and more information on the stories covered on this show on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.